Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Misty Winston Show here on TNT Radio. Before we get to our next guest, I do want to talk to you a bit more in detail about alleged Vault 7 whistleblower Joshua Schulte. His trial is in day two today in New York. There's not a lot of coverage happening about it, obviously, but InterCity Press is actually in the courtroom. So if you want, he's doing live tweets. If you would like to follow somebody that's covering the trial, please do that. So in opening statements today, or yesterday, I'm sorry, attorney David Denton said, quote, "This man, Joshua Schulte, the defendant, is responsible for the single biggest theft of classified intelligence information in the history of the Central Intelligence Agency," end quote. I like that he's saying that as if it's a bad thing. It's so funny to me. So Schulte has said to jurors that while investigators have singled him out as the culprit, they actually still have no idea who was behind the leak. He said, quote, "They first singled me out as the guilty party, then worked backwards," end quote. Speaking about the leak, he also said that, quote, "Someone stole their crown jewels and they failed to realize that for an entire year. It's not a good look for the CIA," end quote. And yes, that's very much true. So there's a new article out in Consortium News today that's written by whistleblower John Kiriakou. And from that article, he says, "The government believes that Schulte was a malcontent who released to WikiLeaks in 2017 the equivalent of 2 billion pages of top secret CIA data with code names like Brutal Kangaroo, Angerquake, and McNugget. These programs, collectively known as Vault 7, were custom-made techniques used to compromise Wi-Fi networks, hack into Skype, defeat antivirus software, and even hack into smart TVs and the guidance systems in cars. They were the CIA's modern-day crown jewels. One senior CIA officer likened the revelation to, quote, a modern day Pearl Harbor," end quote. So dramatic. Schulte went to trial in New York in early 2020 with the Justice Department accusing him of, quote, "the single biggest leak of classified national defense information in the history of the CIA," end quote. After 4 years, or I'm sorry, 4 weeks of testimony and 6 days of jury deliberation, he was found guilty of contempt of court and making a false statement, both of which are minor charges for which federal sentencing guidelines call for imprisonment of 0 to 6 months. The jury deadlocked on all other counts, and the judge declared a mistrial. Schulte remains in prison awaiting retrial. He has been incarcerated since October 2018. So just a brief aside here. So he was tried in 2020. As John Kiriakou points out in this article, he was found guilty of two very minor charges, and a mistrial was declared for the rest of it. And instead of releasing him, they have decided to keep him in prison since then while they await the retrial, which is, you know, just crazy what he's had to go through. Schulte is not treated like other prisoners in the facility where he's being held. So he's in New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Center. When he goes to court, for example, he is required to wear shackles around his ankles and chains around his waist, to which his handcuffed hands are attached. His hands are then enclosed in a steel box that is itself locked separately. This is crazy. He has shackles around his ankles, chains around his waist, to which his handcuffed hands are he's attached at his waist. And then they put his hands in a box that is locked separately. He's just a dude who used to work. He's not like a serial killer or a terrorist or, you know what I mean? It's dramatic. In the Justice Department's classified conference room where he is required to meet his attorneys, he is chained to an eyeball in the floor, just as the CIA restrains Al-Qaeda prisoners during their interrogations. He is not permitted to use the restroom during these visits. His guards give him a plastic bag at the start of the meetings. And if he has to go to the bathroom, he must urinate and defecate in the bag. I mean, that's nice. Schulte's day-to-day existence is far more difficult. First, he has been subject to special administrative measures, also known as SAMs, since his arrest. He is in solitary confinement in a cage in a small concrete box the size of a standard parking space 24 hours a day. He is allowed 2 showers a week and is not permitted to use the phone or email. He's not permitted to watch television or to listen to the radio. He's not permitted to have visitors other than his attorneys, and he is not permitted to make purchases from the commissary. He has complaints about the way that he is being treated. In this article at Consortium News, highly recommend you check it out and please support their work. Consortium News does amazing work. John talks about how you have the process you have to go through in order to complain when you feel like your rights are being violated. And it's very extensive. And obviously, nobody ever wins. It ends up going to like the headquarters of the Bureau of Prisons. And as John points out, about in this article, no prisoner ever wins at BOP headquarters. So it's really disgusting, the conditions that he's being treated in. So in a recent lawsuit that his attorneys have filed, they say, quote, he's locked in a cage in a concrete box the size of a parking space with purposefully obstructed views of outside. The cages are filthy and infested with rodents, rodent droppings, cockroaches, and mold. There is no heating or air conditioning in the cages. There is no functioning plumbing. The lights burn brightly 24 hours per day, and the inmates are denied normal visitation, access to books and legal material, medical care, and dental care. All attorney-client privilege is also void as the prison confiscates, opens, and reads all legal mail. The process imposed is arbitrary and not tailored to any legitimate government interest. So this is what happens when you're a whistleblower. It is really despicable the way that we treat whistleblowers in this country. These are people who have, you know, taken great personal risk to expose corruption or, you know, whatever. And in the case of Joshua Schult, he exposed how the CIA is able to like turn our cars into, you know, an assassination machine, essentially, or our TV into a microphone, to surveil all of us. Again, this trial is expected to last about 5 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of it this time. Again, he just had the he was guilty on two charges last time, and then a mistrial was declared for the rest. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. It's really unfortunate that he has been held in prison all of this time while the retrial was brought about. Obviously, COVID pushed that back multiple times. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And again, thanks to Inner City Press for covering this. There's not been a lot of coverage. So thanks to him, he's in the courtroom. So I appreciate that very much. And go follow and support their work over there as well. Okay. That's all I have for you. This is TNT Radio.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm fed up with woke society, too. Okay, joining us for the hour is Steve Poikkanen. Steve is co-host of both Slow News Day Show and AM Wake Up, which you can find over on The Rockfin. And you can follow Steve on the tweeters at Slow News Day Show. Hey, Steve, welcome back to the show, my friend.
What's going on, Misty?
Whole lot of nada, you know.
Yeah. What's the justification for keeping Joshua Schult incarcerated? The official statement? Like, because we can?
Basically. I don't know that anybody's really ever asked. But I think that that's probably the real reason, just because we can.
And then it's like the criminal version of... David Duchovny's character in Zoolander, who has his hand preserved in a glass case, right? Yes. Because he was the hand model. But yes. Instead, Joshua Schulte's hands are so dangerous.
Isn't that
Misty?
Crazy?
Because he might get a hold of a prison guard's phone. And
oh my God.
If he gets a hold of somebody's phone, or maybe gets a hold of a prison computer on the way from his isolation cell to the isolation chamber where they put the steel thing on him, to the isolation van where they take him to his isolation unit in the courtroom where they literally bolt him to the floor. On the off chance that he gets a hold of the computer on the way, he's got to have the steel box on his fingers because he is a criminal mastermind. And just like Bruce Lee, those hands are deadly weapons.
Yeah. I mean, national security is at stake. It's so stupid. It's so obviously. Yes. It's so obviously, I don't know, just very punitive. You know what I mean? Like it's like the intent behind it is just to make his life as miserable as possible. And it's just so stupid. And the idea that they're able to get away with it, he's being held in special administrative measures. And is unable to talk to anybody but his lawyers. He can only take a shower twice a week. When he's in meetings with lawyers, he has to, you know, take a dump in a plastic bag. It's just so stupid. It really is.
And over 1,000 days of this without actually being found guilty of anything. And then where we're at now, additional time of all of this, with only being found guilty of what, like obstruction?
Yeah, it was obstruction and like making a false statement or something like that were the two minor, like as John points out in this article, for both of those charges, generally the sentencing guidelines is 0 to 6 months.
Michael
and he's been
Sussman,
held for 5 years.
The Perkins Coy Clinton lawyer who just got a case dismissed and found not guilty for lying to the FBI and the CIA and everyone else. He made so many false statements that in order to convict him, you would have had to have rolled up the entire FBI leadership. He gets to walk away. Meanwhile, Schulte gets going on what now? Like 12 or 1300 days of special administrative measures?
I don't know how long overall he's been under special administrative measures, but I do know that he's been held in pretrial detention for 1,756 days.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's insane.
Yes. Yes, it is. It really, really is. And it's this is what I think this is part of the using whistleblowers and somebody like Julian Assange as the example. I mean, I think that's why he's being held in prison. That's why they're locking his hands in a box. And that's why he's, they want to make an example of him. If you do this, this is what we're going to do to you. He's the proverbial head on the stake. Don't mess with the CIA. They'll come for you. You know what I mean? So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. It's supposed to last 5 weeks ish, give or take. We'll see if they actually get him on something. Didn't they admit in the last trial in 2020 that they actually really have no idea who is the real source? I feel like they admitted that in court. That's what I thought. Okay. So as he said, like, it feels like he's become kind of the patsy. They decided he was guilty and then they worked backwards from there. I don't know.
The parallel collection that the feds are famous for, where it doesn't matter what the reality is. The evidence will be gathered to fit the conclusion because the conclusion is all that matters. And they want as minimal media coverage on this as humanly possible because it's been 5 years since the release of Vault 7. They weren't kidding when they referred to it as their Pearl Harbor. That's their entire, invasion suite. That was it. That was the entire hacking tool suite for the CIA. And there's so much in there that most people don't know about. So to have 5 or 6 weeks, there's still people, Misty, doing shows about the stupid Johnny Depp and Amber Heard thing. Yes. There's still people making content about that. Still. And then with Schulte, you've got the largest release of the CIA's treasure trove of hacking tools. And that to me sounds like it could make for entertaining television. But no, I got to wave a little bit of garlic in front of Liz Cheney and scare her into a courtroom every night.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Like the January 6th stuff has been made into like this prime time, event. Everybody wants to try to make it so dramatic so that they can rival the ratings of the Johnny Depp trial. Meanwhile, the guy who is the alleged leaker of the largest CIA leaks in history, which exposes so much. Steve's not joking. There's so much in Vault 7. There is so much in Vault 7. It's nuts. And that never gets talked about. Nobody ever talks about what's actually in the releases. And there's been no coverage of Vault 7, really. None isn't fair. But very little coverage of what's in Vault 7. And you'd think that that would be something that people would want to know about. You know, they're turning your TV into a microphone so they can surveil you. Is anybody interested? I don't know. I'm interested. I want to know. But, I guess not.
The other side of that is, people are just trying to figure out how they're going to afford gas so they can go to work, so they can continue to afford gas. And then meanwhile, you've got Joe Biden and the press secretary, the new one, running around being like, the economy's booming. We've never been better. Everybody's great. I don't know what you're talking about. There was some blue check. Oh, it was Mehdi Hassan that was no, there's no recession, but you know, vibes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's such a douche. Did he delete that? Because I don't.
He did. He wound up deleting everything related to that thread because he got so thoroughly by his own class. He got like people in his own department and that pay the same rent he does were like, oh, my old boy, maybe perhaps you should
sit this one out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the upper class version of hey, maybe don't.
Yeah. Maybe don't. I mean, could he be more out of touch, though? I mean, he literally, I wish I could pull it up. I hope somebody got screenshots of it. In a moment of irony,
this is the cartoon world we live in, Misty Winston and Misty Winston's viewing audience or listening audience. I quote tweeted Mehdi Hassan, and I said something to the effect of Mehdi's whole purpose is to breathe life into the Upton Sinclair quote. It's difficult for a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Erickson, former right wing and Breitbart radio host, ultra Eric Erickson retweeted that.
Wow. No
Eric Erickson
there. That's funny.
Was like, oh, that's, yeah, that lands.
Yes.
And that's just how weird, that's the world we live in right now.
That's the world you live in, though, because you have like a weird, like a lot of times people, like weird people will retweet you or whatever. It's like people you would not expect, unless you're Steve Poikonen. Yeah, that's the world you live in. 100%.
I had a really weird follow the other day. I can't remember exactly who. Oh, it was like some Sky News person in Australia started following me. And I'm like, am I going to get a hit piece in Australia now?
I get a lot of weird follows too, but usually mine are just trolls. You know, they're just ridiculous hate stalkers.
Is there any way I feel weird crowdfunding for it. So is there any way we can hold like a contest to see if we can raise the quality of the people that try to come at you? Or have like a creative writing contest or something like that.
Something.
And the winner gets to come on somebody's show and just yell at you or yell.
Yes,
about
I'll
you
do that.
15 minutes.
I'll do that.
You get 15 minutes on the show, do a whole set. If you can raise the bar a little bit.
I deserve better trolls. I say it all the time. I'm not kidding. Like, it's not that that's some like increased sense of self there. My trolls are just really, really stupid. It's really a sight to behold. It's fascinating to me that they're that dumb.
It's we're halfway through 2022, and I swear I saw somebody try to yell at you about something like Tulsi Gabbard did.
Yes.
You know,
I've never supported Tulsi. Never once. And this happens all the time. People will like lump me in with like a bunch of Tulsi stands and act like I worked on her campaign or something. I've never in my entire life supported Tulsi. Am I supportive of her efforts to free Julian Assange and the fact that she speaks out on that? Yes, I've given her credit where it's due. I've never supported Tulsi, but people still come for me and act like I'm like her biggest supporter. It's so painful. And every time I'm like, again, I don't know why I have to keep explaining this to people. I've never supported Tulsi Gabbard, ever. Didn't vote for her. I did send her a donation. I sent one donation because they changed the rules and you had to get so many donations or whatever. So I think I sent her like $4, her and Mike Gravel both, because I wanted to see them on the debate stage. So to like full disclosure, I did send her some money. But I do not, I've never supported Tulsi Gabbard, but that's the level of my trolls. And that's been disproven time and time and time again. And you're right. It's the year 2022. We're halfway through 2022 and people still try to say that I was a Tulsi supporter. It's just so painful. It really is painful. Okay. We have to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with more with Steve Poikonen here on TNT Radio.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Hey everyone, TNT presenter Misty Winston here. As you may already know, journalist and publisher Julian Assange is facing extradition and 175 years in prison for doing what journalists all over the world do every day. This case represents the most dangerous threat to press freedom in history. The case now sits in the hands of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. Please contact her office and encourage her to do the right thing and refuse the extradition request. This case will forever change the future of press freedom. We can't afford to lose.
One in six Australian children are living in poverty and urgently need help. Children like 8-year-old Anna, who miss out on so much and struggle to keep up in class. She may never catch up. No matter how hard she tries, the impacts of poverty mean her best just isn't enough. Help children like Anna access extra learning support so they can break the cycle of poverty. Please make a tax-deductible donation by June 30. Search the Smith family now.
The new communism is COVIDism, mandating that the truth be told. This is TNT Radio.
This is, in fact, TNT Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is the Misty Winston Show. We're joined by Steve Poikkonen. All right, my friend, let's talk about the food shortages and, well, essential goods shortages in general. But the idea that we've had so many, I covered this, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks ago, all of the like random suspicious fires at like food distribution centers. I mean, that's not suspicious at all, right? Totally normal.
Well, okay, so... We've been tracking this whole thing for a pretty long time now. And just because we had been seeing all sorts of white papers and predictions from, you know, the predator class and the usual NGO organizations and World Economic Forum and stuff like that, saying that there was going to be food impending food crisis. Saying that there was going to be a breakdown of the supply chain, saying that there was going to be massive grid attacks, there was a cyber pandemic that was predicted. And in each scenario, there was always something that was going to go wrong with the supply chain and the food chain or the food supply. So at the beginning of the year, by the time March rolled around, there'd been about 24 of these storage facilities and processing plants that had more or less spontaneously caught fire or had something a little bit suspicious going on with them. And then they burned up. And all over the world, these things started happening. So from about February to now, just in the U.S., we're up over 70 of these facilities that have burned, including having like airplanes fly into them. Globally, we're now over 300 in terms of plants, farms, and facilities that have caught fire or otherwise been destroyed. And there's a couple of different ways to look at it, but all of them steer to making regular people go hungry so that a couple of people can capitalize.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, 100%. I know that recently, I think I covered, there was the big egg farm that just caught fire. I think it was in Minnesota. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, I mean, these things just keep happening, and it's so weird that nobody, I mean, other than the usual suspects, like you guys have been covering it, you know, some, I think that Ryan's been covering it on Last American Vagabond. You know, the people who usually cover this stuff are covering it, but it seems weird that nobody, it's not more regular people aren't, their attention isn't called to this. Cause this is, it's a big deal. Like this is a problem.
And I've said it a million times that all of this, all of these shortages, it's 100% avoidable, 100% manufactured. And that's, I mean, learn to grow food, learn to grow food, start now. Yeah. There's a learning curve. Yeah. Start now.
Yeah. If you're living in Ohio, your eggs shouldn't come from California.
Yeah.
If you're living in California, your meat shouldn't come from Argentina. None of that is necessary. So here's how the news cycle around all of these facilities burning has gone. We'll cover it. Ryan will cover it. Christian Westbrook, Ice Age Farmer. You know, the half a dozen, maybe a dozen other people will cover it. Then somebody who watches like a couple of those shows will give it to one of Tucker Carlson's producers. And then about a week later, they'll have a little bit of downtime on a segment. So they'll run a segment on something like food processing plants. Laura Ingraham will do a show on it the next night. A couple other people will do. And then immediately the entire like liberal and left media sphere will go, oh, Tucker Carlson has a hoax about food processing plants. Because anything that Tucker Carlson says is a secret white replacement theory limited hangout psyop. And then it gets absorbed into the like lefty consciousness as, oh, this is a right-wing hoax and only people who like Tucker Carlson repeat it.
Yes. And that's intentional, I think. I think that that's Tucker Carlson's purpose, is to make stuff like that. I think Alex Jones was a great example of that. You know, it. What's her face? Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? Is that her name?
Oh, yeah.
I'm so bad at names. Yeah. Like, I think that a lot of the times that these people are used as, you know, if they talk about it, then a whole segment of the population will instantly disagree with them, not because of what they said, but because they dislike the person, which is so infantile and stupid. You know, people I don't like say great things all the time. That doesn't mean that I have to disagree with them just because I don't like them. It's so dumb. But that's the liberal mindset, really. And kind of the, at least the quote unquote lefty mindset. I mean, the online left, we'll say, that's kind of their mindset. If somebody that they don't like says something, then they instantly just disagree with it. It has nothing to do with them. It's so tribal.
So reactionary. It is. It's it's almost Pavlovian.
Yes.
Like there are just certain names or certain outlets. We ran a clip this morning. And a person was being asked a series of questions, and it got to the next question, and the person's whole body changed. Like you could see there was a physical turn. There was a complete change in like positioning of eyebrow, forehead, cheek, the whole thing. The eyes did some wild stuff. And they became an entirely different, physically combative, you know, intimidating in terms of presence just by position of posture, individual. And oh, man, it was wild. And then they sat there and basically accessed the file. Like you could see the look on the face, eyeballs straight up at the sky, trying to run through the mental bookmarks to call up the right tabs to go ahead and read off the answers.
Yes.
And then the answers got read off just almost robotically.
I know. It's weird. That like, that's it's weird when you can tell that they're, it's a very kind of preconditioned response. It's already been determined. You know, that's a really creepy thing. It is very robotic. It's very creepy to see people do that. You can tell that there is no independent thought. There's no independent thought. None. None whatsoever. And there's what's so funny about that too, about the whole Tucker Carlson thing. Cenk Uygur just, I don't know. He did like an interview. I'm blocked, so I don't know. But he did some interview where I guess the whole premise of it was something about like Glenn Greenwald and Max Blumenthal and Jimmy Dore are evil because they are cozying up with Tucker Carlson. Cenk Uygur takes money from billionaires. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is he talking about? Not to say that like Tucker Carlson's a great dude. He's not. But it's just the hypocrisy. Like, he doesn't even, maybe he does recognize his own hypocrisy. I don't know. I don't know that he's bright enough to, but I don't know. It's just, it's weird. Like, I don't like Tucker Carlson, but it's strange to just discount everything that he says or does or covers just because you don't like him as a person. That's just really weird to me. I don't know why people do that. It's the same thing as like, I'm not a big Tulsi person, but if she says something good or that I agree with, I'm going to give credit where it's due. And then I'm a Tulsi stan. You know
what I mean? But you don't have a dog in their fight. Yeah. And you're not trying to sell an invisible product.
No.
And so, okay. So Cenk Uygur, he's not a journalist. He's not a newsman. He knows the broadcast entertainment business. He knows a model of that business that by virtue of them being basically alone in it, they more or less pioneered. There's a TYT model for how to do a YouTube show.
Yes.
We've talked about this. There's a ton of people that follow it to varying degrees of success. You know, there's a handful of different like YouTube show, news show formats that are out there that people do too. And we're 100% open on the AM Wake Up that we're, you know, borrowing format wise for parts of our show from No Agenda. Very open about that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's any, you know, we do enough different and enough that nobody else does that I'm okay with it, because you should look at, you know, what's worked and what does well and be like, oh, I could incorporate some elements of that into what I'm doing because those guys are smart. You know,
yeah.
But what Cenk does is he tries to entertainment tonight his way through stuff that is easily provable to be false.
Yes.
You know, and he's going for like the immediate click. He's going for the immediate relevancy. It's okay if something blows up in his face because he'll be back on the air the very next day screaming about something different. Or like perceived attacks on him in his head. And that's the show and that's the content. And there's people who love that genre of whatever it is. They flock to it, but there's competition for it. Cenk's not the only guy in the game anymore. Nobody's buying what he's selling. So he's got to run out every other week and be like, fight me, Joe Rogan, or Jimmy Dore's an asshole, or whatever, you know, in order to try to claw back some of that relevancy that he had when he was one of the only people in the game. And then the big guy in the game, because a whole bunch of new people flooded it and copied what looked like a successful business model.
Yes. And it was, I mean, listen, TYT was for a time very successful at what they did. As you said, they were the only ones in the game at one point. They managed to grow themselves into a major company that is getting funded by billionaires. And I mean, it is a successful business model, but it's unfortunate. And I get that a lot of people are kind of drawn to that sort of, as you say, that sort of genre. It makes me sad though. It's kind of like I don't think TYT necessarily does it, but also the TMZ, like making politics TMZ style. Oh, it's just like the people who cover online Twitter drama and that's their news show. It's just painful. And it gets a lot of clicks though, unfortunately. I mean, people love the drama. People love to see, you know, Cenk and Jimmy go at it and you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC having their little spats on Twitter. Like, people love that stuff. People love the drama. It's just not for me. Not for me at all. Don't like it. Not a fan. It's gross.
Oh. No, I mean, we've talked about this before, that the only real problem that I have with any of that is pretending that yeah. your gossip or your react thing is genuine journalism, or you're out there doing hard hitting news. You know, right. you're talking about what people do in their own time, or you're talking about what, you know, your show is about other people's shows, or your show is about yes. what other people's lives are. And you're not doing political journalism. You're just, you know, you're snitching on people. Like, okay, yeah. we'll do that, but own up to it. And that's, you know, we're good. That's all I really care about.
Yeah, that's true. My and that's like
the water base.
Pretty I can hear him. Right. Hi, Gomez. Go. Gomez is the best dog. He's the bestest dog. But yeah, like people like the Vanguard, they do kind of TMZ style stuff, but I think they own it. I mean, I don't watch them, but I think I've seen them where they own it. They're like, yeah, okay, that's what we do. And that's cool. If that's, I mean, do your thing. There's an audience for that. Obviously, I think there's a lot. Obviously, people love drama. But yeah, I don't like when people like pretend that it's something that it's not, or like when Cenk Uygur tries to pretend that he's a journalist of some kind, or that he's I mean, it's just silly. All that stuff is just very silly. And this you're right. I think it is a desperate grasp for relevancy. I think that's why he's constantly going after Jimmy Dore and Glenn Greenwald and whoever else. I mean, there's a bunch of people that he, you know, tends to go after. Jimmy's a big one. Okay, Jimmy has responded. I was just wondering if he had. But yeah, Breonna Joy Gray. For cozying up to Tucker Carlson is his thing. It's just dumb. Nobody's cozying up to Tucker Carlson. He has a massive platform, huge. Like, he's the most watched guy in mainstream media. So if he called me today and wanted me to go on to talk about Julian Assange, I'm there. Sign me up. What time? I'm there. It's, you know, you would be silly. That's self-defeating to not exploit the guy who is the most watched news guy. I mean, I use that very loosely there, but he does have the most watched platform in mainstream media. That's millions of people. I think he gets like 5 million viewers a night. Why would you not take advantage of that? Why would you not exploit that? I mean, that's the way I see it. I would just be exploiting him for his platform. Let's go. Sign me up, Tucker. Give me a call. You know what I mean? Give me a call. He does great on Assange. And in fact, thanks to Jimmy Dore. I mean, Jimmy Dore kind of, at least that's what Tucker said. Jimmy Dore changed his mind on that. So kudos to Jimmy Dore for that as well. You know, it's just,
I would like to start including Joe Rogan as part of the mainstream media.
Yeah.
As like Joe Rogan has the most, if you look at, all of his guests are mainstream guests, on the off chance that he gets a couple of like random doctors on there, not random doctor. I'm not going to say that. I'm not to say to dismiss, you know, who Peter McCullough or, you know, Pierre Corey or those guys are. But I mean, on the off chance he gets a couple of dissenting voices, they're yeah. dissenting voices from the mainstream. Dr. Peter McCullough was the most published cardiologist on the planet.
Yeah.
Going into the, you know, that's all he did was treat patients, write papers, and talk about, like, you know, the little tricks that he's learned along the way to help treat patients. That's it. But I'm because right. of that, the guy wrote a lot. You know, he's not like dragging up, you know, somebody who's claiming to be the bastard child of Violent J of ICP. They have something that they're trying to get off the ground, and that's not what the show is.
Right.
You know, that's, it's a fair, very mainstream yeah. show, and yeah. it pulls in 3.5 times the audience that Tucker Carlson yes. does.
Yes, it does.
You know, if that's not crazy big audience, definitively what the mainstream is, I don't know how we're defining it.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't watch Joe Rogan enough to really know like the kind of guests that he get. Like if he has somebody on that I'm interested in, then I'll check it out. But I'm not 3 hours for a podcast, dude. I can't. I don't have that kind of time. I cannot. So if it's somebody interesting, then okay, fine. But I don't watch. I don't pay enough attention to Joe Rogan to know all the people that he has. But I think that's fair. Yeah, I think he's definitely.
I couldn't tell you who the last dozen guests have been to be like, oh, okay, well, if you showed him to me, I'd be like, oh yeah, no, I know who that is. Oh, okay, famous right. author, famous comedian.
Yeah,
comedian,
that's comedian, fair.
Spook, you know. And that's the guest list. And now there's fair. Like a three spook to every one funny person or every one like halfway accurate person ratio on the show. It's increasingly becoming, I don't know. So I think we talked about this. The part of what sets the allowable parameters of conversation in the mainstream, that's what Joe Rogan's become.
Yes, you know, 100%.
As soon as he said ivermectin, you were allowed to talk about ivermectin.
Yep. You were allowed to open the door. You were allowed to have that conversation. All of the
quote unquote independent media people that had been riding the fence on it forever immediately talked in. I always knew, they said.
Yeah.
I always, you know, that's what happened. And then rewriting Rogan history. Had Robert Malone on. And so then everybody could talk about whatever Malone was on there to talk about it. I can't even remember because we had already been talking to him for over a year. We had already been talking to Dr. Peter McCullough. We had already doing all of these conversations. But when the allowable parameters are being set from what people think is the outside, anyone saying, oh, wait, no, man, Joe Rogan's barely scratching the surface. You have no idea. He's not even going in the right direction. You're looked at as the 100% fringe, complete crazy person, tinfoil hat wearing cuckoo bird. And you're I'm literally standing 1 degree away from Joe Rogan in terms of guests.
Yep. Yes, 100%. But and Joe Rogan is the metric now for what is allowable discourse on the out, like you said, the quote unquote outside. It's not really the outside, but he's what sets that precedent. Okay, we have to take another quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with more here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
On the 14th of June, Jeffrey M. Jones and Lydia Sard from the Gallup Company released an article titled Usual Midterm Indicators Very Unfavourable for Democrats. They note that the President's party usually loses seats in midterm elections, but this time they suggest a record may be set. This is based on Gallup's latest opinion polling for presidential approval, congressional approval, US satisfaction and economic conditions. All these indicators are at least 10 points lower than the historical average at the time of past midterm elections, and most are on pace to be the worst of such readings. Gallup data going back to 1974 was analysed, and the party of unpopular presidents has lost an average of 37 House seats. Today, most Democrats are too ideologically blinded or opportunistic to prevent an electoral wipeout that could well set a record. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
The new communism is COVIDism. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
All right. This is TNT Radio. We're joined by Steve Poikonen. And I want to talk to you. I want to switch gears because I want to talk about the Clinton. So the guy that broke the story on the Bill Clinton and what the heck is her name?
Loretta Lynch.
Thank you, Loretta Lynch. That there was that whole meeting on the tarmac where it was, you know, they tried to claim that it was like a very spontaneous, oh, hey, how you doing type thing. But come on, nobody's that dumb. So the guy that broke that story has apparently committed suicide. I saw you tweeted about this, and I know I can talk to you about it, and you won't act like I'm crazy for being suspicious.
Well, there's just so many people who have either been employees of or people who were involved in writing about and stumbled upon some information or broke a story about the Clintons that have just, gosh darn it, got a bad case of the sads, and not the new sads that the CDC has warned us about, the sudden adult death syndrome, which is totally legit and in no way, shape, or form related to adverse events to experimental injections. But the original sads, which is the I'm gonna go away now. And so what they do is they somehow find a way to give themselves two gunshots to the back of the head and not leave a suicide note in most cases. It is just eerie.
Listen, y'all, I don't know a single person who has died under suspicious circumstances. Not one. The Clintons know dozens of people who come on. You can label me a conspiracy theorist if you want, but there's something to that. Nobody knows that many people who have died under suspicious circumstances, and it's just like, oh, coincidental. I mean, that's absurd. That's just ridiculous.
Maybe this is it, Misty. Maybe the whole time that they've been Bill and Hillary Clinton, they have had the same HR person involved with hiring their bodyguards and all of these people that have turned up dead. And that HR person, not the Clintons, is the bad guy. And the HR person is doing the job screening questionnaires like, do you have any history of mental illness in your family? Oh, yes. Okay. You can go on to the next round. Is there any history of depression or suicide? Oh, yes. Oh, and they get super excited about it. Oh, really? Oh, goody. You know, and then, and then they get the call. You've got the job. I don't know. Different hiring department than the one I'm used to.
For sure. I don't want to, this guy, this is a real dude. Like, he's a real dude. He has family. I don't mean to make his death, fodder for, debate or conversation, but it is weird. It is very weird. I mean, he's 45 years old. It's just weird that the Clintons know so many people who have died under suspicious circumstances. Is it possible that this guy legitimately committed suicide? Sure. But I do think that it's suspect, and it's obviously something that, I mean, there's a whole thing, the Clinton body count, right? People talk about this all the time. It's a thing. There's obviously something to that. And this one does seem a little bit weird, though, because that happened years ago that he broke this story. So it seems like.
Well, so what had happened is that in 2020, he came out with a book about it.
Oh,
and he got back in the news. There was stuff about, oh, there's going to be additional information in an expanded re-release sort of thing. We're going to re-release the book. We've got a couple of more chapters to add kind of deal about it. No history of, you know, being depressed. This is a guy who like went to the University of, I think, Alabama. He was a football player. And then he got involved in like local TV. And started doing that and ended up, just being the guy who broke the story about this is at the time Attorney General Loretta Lynch and then presidential primary candidate's husband, Hillary Clinton, right before they were going to determine whether or not Hillary Clinton was going to be investigated over the destruction of email servers.
Yeah.
And then like 48 totally. Hours later, they go, yeah, no, we're not. There's no there. Turns out. Yeah, no, didn't have a chat with Bill Clinton. That's not why I'm using that specific phrase.
I mean, come on. Being looked at like Hillary Clinton's potentially. Come on. And then he just happens to meet Loretta Lynch at an airport and decides to have a just totally friendly conversation. I think they tried to claim, wasn't it the time they tried to claim they were talking about their grandkids or something? Yeah. You just had a friendly chat
just
about
our grandkids.
Just a couple
of people on private planes happened to pull up next to each other on the tarmac. We were originally going to recreate that old Grey Poupon commercial, but we thought it might be a little out of touch given that it's campaign season. So we decided, hey, why not just catch up about the grandkids? 25 minutes later, we're up, wheels up. It's fine. It's fine. Next question.
Yeah, and just days later, the FBI decides not to bring criminal charges against Hillary Clinton. I mean, I'm sure that had nothing to do with it, though, right? Totally unrelated. That chat about grandkids. I'm sure there was nothing, had nothing to do with the FBI's decision to not pursue charges against Hillary Clinton. Oh,
I know you're
so
about to
ridiculous.
Have a new show, and I want to pitch an idea your new show where you just, what if you're having a guest on to deep dive, and just on the off chance the new press secretary comes up, just play a 2-minute game with your guest, ask them any question and have them spin an answer, and then play a short clip of the new press secretary, and your guest will automatically feel immediately better about themselves for their ability to spin some nonsense out of the air, because Corrine,
she's so bad.
Not ready for prime time. And this is a lady that I happen to find, you know, hits all,
I know,
checks all
girl.
My, like, checks all the boxes. Yeah, checks all my boxes, man. Checks all my boxes.
Yeah, I get it. She's terrible.
Ah, man, she's cute.
So bad. That but she's terrible, so dude.
I know.
Day,
she's so bad.
They said something about Brazil or something. Somebody asked her a question about Brazil, and she said, "Yeah, we still support Juan Guaido."
Recognize Juan
Guaido. Yeah, I'm like, honey, Brazil is not Venezuela. Somebody should tell her. And it's just
so
I thought Jen Psaki was bad, but holy cow!
The Biden administration has decided to franchise Juan Guaido. There's currently a Juan Guaido in Venezuela and Brazil. We're hoping by the end of 2024 that we will have Juan Guaidos in 17 locations throughout the global south. Juan Guaido is going to become the Tim Hortons of global south dictators. We're hoping to open up a factory, in fact, in Caracas sometime very, very soon. Next question.
Oh, Juan Guaido. What a joke that guy is. Holy cow. And I love
watching
to see
him get
getting
tore up and thrown out of that restaurant, and then
so
watching the
my
people
soul.
Just hucking plastic furniture at him as
yes.
they're trying to shove him into the car. And there's like
yes.
random, I don't know how old they are, but I mean, younger people just picking up rocks and hucking them at
yeah.
the car. There's
Let's
like
go.
A teenage chick in a backpack that picks up a whole hunk full of ground and hucks
yeah.
it at him.
It's good for my soul. I mean, this dude is such a schmuck. He is a 100% a puppet of the United States. He's attempted multiple coups over the past several years. He deserves all of that. I don't feel even a tiny bit sorry for him for any of that stuff. Stay home, Juan. Stay home. Stay home. Okay, so we only have a couple minutes left. I want to make sure you have time to tell everybody where they can find you and the shows and what you have coming up, all that good stuff, because you guys have amazing guests all the time. So tell everybody where they can find you.
So you can check us out over at the Rockfin, rockfin.com/AMWakeUp and rockfin.com/SlowNewsDay. All of the videos are archived and available for download for free at videos.slownewsdayshow.com. All of the social medias are at Slow News Day Show. Tomorrow, we are almost always joined on Thursdays by stand-up comedian John F. O'Donnell. He will be.
I love John.
Showing. Oh, he's fantastic.
He's great.
He
yeah,
is. Yeah. So we're gonna be doing the JFOD Thursday. there's a potential for an in-studio guest or two on and off for the rest of the summer, really. We got a handful of people that are kind of on rotation to drop in and be a third mic in the studio with us. The Bank Sisters are planning on coming by. We've got a gentleman named Jim Gale from Food Forest Abundance going to come in and talk to us about how to grow food in all kinds of different climates and like indoors in your house, growing like micro salad greens next to your coffee maker kind of thing. Weird stuff into it. Very solutions oriented going forward. So all the places I said, check us out there.
Yeah, very cool. That'll be a good conversation. I had Halo Benson to talk about growing food because that's something that we all need to try to figure out quickly. I know that there's a huge learning curve. So yeah, that'll be a good one. Good show. So everybody check out Steve over at Slow News Day Show and AM Wake Up. And hang tight. I have more coming up for you right after this right here on TNT Radio.